in Tokyo today due to rising infections in the capital and the rapid spread of the highly contagious Delta variant. Organizers said today that they would bar spectators from most events at the games that are scheduled to open in 2 weeks. Currently, it's partly cloudy and 84 degrees in Washington. In New York, it's partly cloudy and 84. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
To rejoice, you see.
Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. This is the Sex, Politics, and Religion Hour, Spar with Jamila. It is the 8th of July. The year's more than halfway over. And I got a bit excited and decided to, do a happy theme song. And yet again, every week, something's going on where I'm going, maybe we should revisit the issue. I'm your host, Jamila Bay. You're listening, of course, to WPFW FM 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. And today we turn our hearts and our minds to Haiti. As you well know, the president of Haiti was assassinated. Juvenal Moïse was killed. His wife left critically wounded. As we speak, Haiti is being called in a state of siege. There's an ongoing manhunt to find the assassins, and according to the interim president, the former Haitian prime minister, police sources in the country are saying that there are 28 or 30 mercenaries involved in the operation. Some of these are accused of being Venezuelan nationals. Allegedly, Haitian Americans have had something to do with it. No one is quite sure what is the situation in terms of, we have a lot of speculation. We still do not know for certain. But what we do know is that the U.S. has a hand in most of what goes on geopolitically. And while there are a number of us here in the U.S. who are going, well, let's, Haiti, they've had some problems. I want to help us to focus on what has been the U.S.'s response to Haiti, not just in this moment, but prior, and what are some of the issues that exist that have had the U.S. hand involved. My first guest this hour is a senior research associate for the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Jake Johnson wrote a fantastic piece entitled "Biden Continues Trump Policy in Haiti Despite Bipartisan Congressional Pushback." Mr. Johnson has just come back from Haiti, and he is joining us now. Thank you so much for being with me this hour.
Thanks for having me.
You know, while the world absolutely is upended by the fact that there was this brazen assassination attempt, the truth of the matter is that the people of Haiti have been dealing with violence and, you know, and political assassinations for some time now, despite the fact that I would argue we Americans are just sort of hearing of this, those of us who don't follow the news.
Yeah, exactly right. I think, you know, there's been a virtual media blackout on Haiti for so long, right, while this situation has deteriorated, right? And I think, you know, again, people are sort of looking today and in shock at this, but, you know, it's so important to be able to sort of look back at some of the context here, not about just the current situation, but also the international role in bringing it to this.
Oh, pardon me, the beauty of mute buttons. What do we know so far? You know, as we look at what's happening, there are a lot of folks who are going, oh, well, you know, Haiti's always had problems, haven't they? Can we help to start connecting how the U.S. involvement in Haiti has, you know, progressed? Let's go backwards. You wrote a wonderful piece about the Biden administration is continuing the Trump era policy toward Haiti. There are a number of elected officials in our Congress who disagree with the way U.S. official policy toward the island nation is going. Let's talk about what specifically is U.S. policy toward Haiti, and why do we have bipartisan agreement that it's bad?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think this you know, discussion sort of centers around policy just in the last year, and hopefully we have enough time to get to, you know, the much longer history here, because I think that's so important as well. But, you know, this really centers around two main things. One was the legitimacy of President Jovenel Moïse's mandate itself, right? So, you know, constitutionally, according to legal experts and civil society groups in Haiti, his presidential mandate actually ended in February 2021, so 7 months ago, right? But he received strong backing, including backing the legitimacy of his mandate from the Biden administration, from the U.S., from the United Nations, from the Organization of American States, right? And that's where the government would cite. They say, oh, well, no, we are legitimate. Look at what the U.S. says. Look at what the U.N. says. Look at what the OAS says, right? And that really emboldened the president to sort of pursue this path forward. Now, the president, you know, had been ruling by decree. There is no functioning parliament. The judiciary system is virtually paralyzed. And so what we've seen is a really worrying consolidation of power, an attack on state institutions. And again, this was all done with the strong support of the Biden administration. And it was coming to a fore here on the issue of elections. Right. So the Haitian government, again, with the strong support of the international community, was for the holding of elections later this year, as well as the constitutional referendum. Now, this process was vehemently opposed by civil society organizations in Haiti, who have been quite clear that the conditions simply do not exist for a free and fair election at the current moment. And instead have proposed, you know, a different path forward. You know, getting all of the actors together, coming up with a transitional government that could sort of oversee some necessary reforms in order to see a credible process and a return to democratic governance in Haiti, right? And where the congressional pushback came was over these two issues, right? So what Congress was saying is, you know, A, the U.S. shouldn't be in the business of interpreting Haiti's constitution. It's not for us to do that or to offer this sort of an opinion. Two, it's a really dangerous proposition to be pushing for elections in the current environment, right? And, of course, you know, that has not resulted in a change in policy at this point.
If we were to recognize that, you know, frankly, the U.S. has, some would use the word interfered, but has certainly been involved with Haitian politics. You know, if my memory serves, the U.S. after Haiti freed itself, helped, and I use air quotes around help, to rewrite the Haitian constitution such that foreigners would be able to own land on Haiti. When the Haitians wrote their first constitution, that was not permitted. So, you know, the U.S. has had its hand in Haitian politics since Haiti freed itself from France. Let me be overly optimistic. How have we, as a U.S. state, benefited the Haitian people, and at any point in history?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think, you know, that history you talk about going back to Haiti's founding, right? I think that is still so relevant today, and so relevant in a lot of the discussion that you see around Haiti, right? This idea that Haiti is uniquely ungovernable, that Haiti is going to descend into anarchy without, you know, strong leadership and these things. You know, these are racist tropes that date back to the Haitian Revolution, right? We've seen it for 200 years, and it's continuing now. Now, I think, you know, look, as you go forward, and I think, you know, there is a distinction between, you know, foreign support and foreign intervention, right? You know, I think there are ways that international actors can engage with Haiti, can listen to voices in Haiti, and can support those efforts, right? But what we've seen far too instead is the imposition of solutions from abroad, right? And so I think that is a really important distinction. And I think if there's, you know, sort of any optimistic path forward in terms of, you know, a more progressive and enlightened role in the international community with regard to Haiti, it's through that. It's through accompaniment, through listening to actors, credible actors in Haiti, and following their lead and actually supporting those efforts, right? What we see far too often, and this is especially the case after the earthquake, was that, yes, there was billions of dollars spent, but the vast majority of it never actually made it into the hands of Haitians, right? So the U.S. foreign aid system, you know, is designed to benefit U.S. corporate interests, right? That is just the nature of the system. That's how they get aid dollars. That's how Congress approves it. It's as much a jobs program here as it is anywhere else, right? And so we're going to have to do a lot of work to change those systems to allow U.S. assistance to be anything other than it has been in the past.
In this moment, what might the U.S. be able to do, if anything? You know, agreed that we should absolutely be listening to, you know, Haitian leaders, Haitian organizations and activists telling us for themselves what they want. What should we be doing, and who in Congress is helping to allow that direction to take place?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. You know, and I think this is an important dynamic to explain a little more in detail, right? Because, you know, it's a situation where the U.S. has been so involved that when something happens in Haiti, you know, many look to the U.S. for a response, right? And I think, you know, it's important to note, right, is that the status quo in Haiti is one in which the U.S. is involved, is intervening. Right? That is the status quo, right? And so I think what you are hearing, you know, and certainly what I'm hearing from contacts in Haiti and organizations that I'm in touch with, right, is not looking for U.S. interference, but rather to take their thumb off of the scale, right? In fact, it has been that interference that has helped drive the situation to its current point. And what's really necessary is for the U.S. to remove that hand, right, to allow Haitians to take that space and to determine their own future, right? That is the necessary change. And I think you have had, you know, some real outspoken members of Congress on this. You know, certainly the Congressional Black Caucus, Maxine Waters, have had a long and historical relationship with Haiti and have led on this issue for many years. You know, more recently in the last year, we've seen Greg Weeks, the new chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, take a real leading role on Haiti. He has a large Haitian constituency in New York, as well as Andy Levin, who is a representative from Michigan. And he's actually, you know, he may be the only member of Congress who speaks fluent Creole after spending a long time in Haiti doing human rights accompaniment work in the early 90s. And so there's some real interest there. I think there's, you know, a real push for a change in policy. You know, I think what we've seen, unfortunately, for much of the last year is the Biden administration really turning a blind eye to this and not listening at all to these voices in Congress who do have, you know, real knowledge of the situation. Now, I think, you know, like the rest of the world, everyone is sort of looking at Haiti now after this latest event. And so, you know, I think if there's some hope there, it's that the administration finally starts taking the opinion of Congress seriously when it comes to Haiti policy.
Okay. I want to ask if I'm being too generous here. When we consider that this current U.S. administration, the Biden administration, inherited a gutted and I would argue hamstrung department, Department of Justice, and absolutely many of the foreign service agents. Is that legacy that this administration inherited part of the reason why their response in this moment is sort of flat-footed and clumsy, that the prior administration took away not just human power but legacy understanding of the role the U.S. played in the region? Or is it just that, frankly, we've always been terrible at dealing with Haiti and this is more of the same?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's really closer to the latter, right? I mean, Haiti policy in terms of the U.S. has been a bipartisan issue for many years, right? Going back certainly to the 2004 coup and the introduction and occupation by UN peacekeepers afterwards, right? This is something that had strong bipartisan support in the U.S. and has, sort of echoed out since then. And you look at the current situation in Haiti, right? It certainly doesn't, the roots of the current crisis do not date to the Trump administration. Certainly the Trump administration, empowered the Haitian president, looked the other way and had, very narrow interests when it came to Haiti, mostly ensuring that Haiti voted against Venezuela at the OAS. That seemed to be the only thing that Trump cared about. But when we look at sort of the deeper roots here, you have to go back to the Obama administration too, right? And when Biden was serving as vice president. And so in 2010, after the earthquake, Haiti held an election. And the election was a total mess. And the U.S., through the OAS, intervened and overturned the results of that election. That led to Michel Martelly entering the presidency in 2011 and the sort of beginning of the consolidation of this conservative right-wing rule under Martelly with Jovenel Moïse. So if you look at why these folks have been in power, they owe that much to the intervention of the U.S. and the OAS under the Obama administration as anything else. Right, so we have to reckon with that legacy as well, right? That this isn't just something, Democrats can blame on Republicans, Republicans can blame on Democrats. There's bipartisan responsibility here all around.
I want to ask you to share how people can follow you and your work and make sure that particularly those of us who do follow the news on Haiti, Jake Johnston can certainly make sure we're reading good sources, particularly those of us who are only fluent in English.
Yeah, certainly. So you can check out our website, cepr.net, and there we've got a blog, Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch. I also encourage folks to go onto Twitter and follow me at Jacob Johnston, J-A-K-O-B, where I'm tweeting quite frequently about Haiti. And also, I think that there are, a lot of folks commenting on this. It's really important to get some more voices out there and into the media, from Haiti and folks who have been trying to do this for a long time. So we're also working on trying to elevate those voices through those platforms as well.
Thank you so very much. It's been a delight to have you. Jake Johnston is Senior Research Associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And when is your next sojourn to Haiti? Do you have plans for this?
Nothing scheduled right now. We'll see how things develop.
Okay, well, we definitely are going to be reaching out as the story unfolds and continues. Thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks for having me. Okay.
You're listening to Spar with Jamila. I'm your host, Jamila Bay, and this is, of course, WPFW. Today's show is all about Haiti, all about the news of the day. Of course, we have to talk about the assassination of the Haitian president. However, I want to talk historically about how Haiti has come to this moment, how U.S. intervention, but not just U.S. intervention. We have to talk about French intervention some would say insinuation into the affairs of the island nation have made it such that this island has had governance issues. We'll just leave it at that. My next guest is an activist, and she's someone who has long roots to the island nation herself. Rebecca Bonham is with she's with an organization here in D.C., the Black Alliance for Peace, and she is with us right now. So, Rebecca, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much, Jamila, for having me. I just want to start off by saying, Black Alliance for Peace is an anti-war, anti-imperialism, anti-colonial organization, which they are an international organization, so there are members, organizations that are based in D.C., and I'm also part of an organization, Pan-African Community Action, which is based in D.C., Southeast D.C., which is part of Black Alliance for Peace, or BAP. But thank you again for having me.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, I recognize that I know just enough to be easily proven wrong. So I want you to straighten me out about a couple of things that I feel like we here in the U.S. might understand, but might need a little bit more context for. When we spoke earlier, you put this into stark relief how it needs to be explained. Every time there's a story about Haiti, the first thing that the newsreader, the newsreader says is the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, the poverty-plagued, war-torn region. Why is that? Why do people always
funny that
go
you ask?
That puts me off, and I'm not even a Haitian person. I couldn't imagine. But anyway, why do we start there? Why do we in the U.S. hear that and accept that?
Well, first thing is, like, who is telling the narrative of, the quote unquote fact that Haiti is the poorest country? It's the corporate mainstream media. They love to preface anything about Haiti. It's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. But why is that? Why is that the case? They never give you the actual historic context around that question, right? Haiti was a slave, was a colony owned by the French, and they, the Haitian slaves, had a revolution in 1804 and won their quote unquote independence from France. And even before that time, Haiti was one of, if not the richest colony for France. And I also want to give a little bit more context. Haiti got its independence in 1804, and they abolished slavery. No one could be enslaved in Haiti in 1804 when it became a quote unquote, and I'll explain this a little bit more, independent nation. And so that's even before. So Haiti was the only free democratic nation that did not accept slavery. Haiti was a free nation even before the U.S. and other Western European countries abolished slavery. So Haiti was a threat from the beginning. And the way that they won the war is even more of a mind blowing. But yeah, so they won their independence in 1804, and at that time their independence was not recognized by France, of course, and other imperial nations at the time, and in order to stave off, you know, the French and their allies, who at the time had a, you know, more military might than Haiti, who just won their independence and they were a slave nation, they agreed to pay France an independence debt so that France would not reinvade them, right? And that amount was, in today's currency, U.S. Dollars currency, $20 billion. So
hold on. We go and pause because that's $20 billion to people who literally were stolen, brought to a whole new place, dropped there, you know, subject to chattel slavery there. These folks, the only people on the history of this planet to throw off the shackles of white colonial chattel slavery, literally have nothing but themselves and the land. And they are being held accountable for a $20 billion debt.
The hypocrisy in that, right? It's just, you know, it's kind of like laugh to keep from crying.
France's little feelings got hurt. And so when was this debt relieved?
Yes. So the noble nation that they are, correct, and they still are, you know, fighting for self-determination and their sovereignty, they paid off in 1947. They paid this debt to France in 1947. Of course, France has never, there's been attempts for France to pay this money back to Haiti. And, of course, France is definitely not about that. And when people say Haiti, and that's just the independence debt. We could talk about, you know, more current history, but, you know, we don't have all the time in the day. So when people say Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, there's people say that, regular people on the street say that, and then corporate media is saying that. There is no historical context of why Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, quote unquote. But you know, there's all of this, okay, Haiti is not poor. It has natural resources that to this day, imperialist powers like the U.S. and France and other powers are reaping the benefits right now as we speak, and the Haitian people are, you know, laboring, toiling, and they can't have their land, they can't have their resources in a quote-unquote sovereign country.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't learn that in my, you know, Western history class. I didn't learn that at all.
In this moment,
you know, that's another show, too, that I'm going to bring you back for. All the Black history they don't teach us even in February.
But
I digress. In this moment, those of us who are justice-minded and freedom-minded recognize that, you know, Haiti does seem to be in a place where it needs assistance in some way. Not necessarily being told what is needed there, absolutely not being told what it needs. And certainly not those of us who, you know, get our language from English journalism. Who should we be listening to, and what are your people saying they are interested in having at this point?
When you say the people, what you're referring to, the people on the ground in Haiti,
I want that to be twofold. I want, you know, people in Haiti absolutely have a voice that I think that we're not hearing. But someone such as yourself who's living in the U.S. but who has connection to Haiti, you can be talking to such as me about who in Congress, who, you know, what geopolitical organizations might have some interest that would benefit the Haitian people. And I would love your perspective about that.
Yeah, so on the ground, in general, what I can say is that, you know, the people want, like, when they first fought for their independence, which they're not even independent right now because of the U.S., you know, foreign imperialist meddling in their sovereign country, is their sovereign, their a chance, because they've never really had a chance to having a democratic society, having self-determination and sovereignty as an independent nation. And that is related to no U.S. and its allies' interventions in Haiti. And, you know, a lot of times they use this coded language. The imperialist powers like the United States and others use this, these coded languages about, oh, we want to protect human rights, peacekeeping missions, and stabilization forces. But all of those words are a replacement for imperialism, colonialism, violence, genocide, et cetera, et cetera. So I can say that, you know, the Haitian people want their to be able to be a sovereign nation without the international interference from the U.S. and its allies. And then for people that want to learn more about, like, true information about what's going on in Haiti and get a better historical context of why Haiti is in the situation that it is now, including, you know, the most recent development of Jovenel Moïse being assassinated, which is a, you know, a puppet government installed by the U.S. and its allies, is, you know, a visiting Black Alliance for Peace. So it's blackallianceforpeace.com/Haiti. On that webpage, there's a lot of information, fact sheets, statements, videos, and so much other things, so you can people can know about Haiti and why, you know, why the U.S. public is being fed this lie or not giving the full context of why Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And Black Alliance for Peace, we have a Haiti committee where we are following what's going on the ground and what narrative is being sold to the American public about Haiti. And I would also recommend, and so that website, again, is blackallianceforpeace.com/Haiti. Haiti is spelled H-A-I-T-I. H like Henry, A-I-T-I. Another film that I would recommend is a two-hour film released in 2017, which really gives you a quicker historical context about Haiti. Is 1804, The Hidden History of Haiti. It's a really good historical document. Documentary about Haiti. And so those are where I would tell people to go to. And, you know, you can also follow Black Alliance for Peace, just with that name, Black Alliance for Peace, on Facebook and Instagram. And then on Twitter, their handle is @blacks4peace. So blacks4peace, one word. Did I answer your question, Jamila?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. So, you know, I like to ask this question about a lot of different things. I like to say, if you have a magic wand, you're still bound by the laws of physics, though. So no time travel, you know, and no magic carpets or whatever. If you could direct what happens right now, what would that look like? What would take place, particularly while the eyes of the world are on are on Haiti. And I would argue that after the past year that we have experienced on this planet, there are more people willing to say, hold on, let's see what the folks on the ground in those spaces would like to say for themselves. You've got this magic wand with those parameters. What do you think should happen next?
What I think should happen next, and I, you know, I'm going to sound like a broken record, is, you know, for the Haitian people to have the opportunity to have to govern themselves without any foreign intervention that has put Haiti further back economically, politically, etc. And so if I could wave my wand, it would be that. Let Haiti get a chance to rule its own country. And it's simple as that.
Excellent. People know a bit about U.S. interference. Can we hit some of the highlights just to help folks remember what we're dealing with? Because, you know, my prior guest and I discussed that there are a number of folks in the Congress who are not happy with the current administration's, you know, policy towards Haiti. But this goes back a ways, you know. So, and I mentioned thanks to the conversation you and I had earlier, you know, when the initial Haitian constitution was written, it was rewritten due to foreign intervention and foreign interference. What are some of the things we in the U.S. need to remember the U.S. government had a hand in when dealing with the Haitian nation?
Yeah, so like you just alluded to, the U.S. Came in and occupied Haiti in 1915, and one of the things that they did was they rewrote the Constitution so that foreign companies, countries can own property in Haiti. And if you look at the current economic situation in Haiti, Haiti's politics, economy is handled by a few, you know, elite families, classes, including the U.S., you know, through organization, OAS, I forget what the acronym stands for, I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but if you look it up, you'll find out what it is. OAS, the core group, and even the UN. And so when they came in 1915, they changed the constitution so that that process could happen, which is still happening today, right? The people don't own their resources, and, you know, there's t-shirt sweat factories in Haiti. These people are working for pennies and expected to do work as if they're machines, and they're not benefiting from it. They can't even afford to live, you know, in this country because of this. And then also something else that I would highlight is, around after the earthquake that happened, Haiti, the UN peacekeeping mission, you know, entered into Haiti. Remember what I alluded to before about, you know, peacekeeping missions. They came into Haiti, you know, to supposedly help Haiti, you know, move forward after the earthquake. And what ended up happening is that these peacekeepers, where they're basically soldiers, you know, under the guise of, you know, peacekeeping missions, came into Haiti and caused a cholera outbreak, as well as raped, you know, the women and women there in Haiti. And so when when the Haitian people talk about, you know, no U.S. and its allies in intervention, this is why. Because every time they come in there, which they still are in there, controlling the economy, the politics, the government, they you know, rape Haiti of its resources. They repress the protesters who have the right to protest against, you know, all of these practices that are just barbaric and inhumane. There's so many others that I can highlight, but, you know, I'll stop at there with those two points.
So I need to bring you back to talk about the interference of the Catholic Church in Haiti.
Yeah, that's another one, too. Yeah. Yes, Jamila.
You know, the brutal Duvalier regime could not have existed but for the Catholic Church. And I guess she's now Saint Teresa. We used to call her Mother Teresa, who absolutely supported the brutality, the secret police, the literal stripping of all of the financial resources out of the country into a dictatorial pocket. But because Mother Teresa liked the Duvaliers for whatever reason, I know me and Catholic school, I was told not to question that when I brought it up.
Mm-hmm. And this is what society like the U.S. tells us. Oh, don't question it. Only question it when we tell you that you can. You understand? So it's just the hypocrisy in that is so deep.
It's madness, and it's literally hurting people. It's actually hurting people, and it's not over. It continues to this day. So. You know, letting the people of Haiti stand up, speak up for themselves, rule themselves, have the determination of and for themselves. I imagine that if ever there was a time that could be possible, I think we're entering into that time. Or do you think I'm too optimistic?
Man, you know. We don't have a choice but to say that we're going to win. The Haitian people are going to get their independence, their actual full independence and sovereignty. We don't have any choice because if we think anything else, like, where does that leave us? Where does that leave us?
And that's, indeed. I want to thank you so much for your time to me, your time with me today. This was a fantastic conversation, and I definitely have to have you back as we talk more about what transpires, and certainly that the U.S. is planning to, you know, I don't know exactly what, but we know that Haiti is on the docket in terms of our foreign policy here. So we definitely need to
slide in there for a third occupation, and that's definitely not what the Haitian people want.
Wonderful. So
thank you so much.
Yeah, we need to make sure we keep our eyes there, and I thank you. I thank you for your time. Folks, you're listening to the Sex, Politics, and Religion Hour, Spar with Jamila. I'm Jamila Bay. We're going to take a very short break and come back in just a moment. Please do stay with us. And you know what? Actually, I haven't opened the – you know, if this conversation around Haiti – moved you in some way. If you are interested in bringing up any other points, go ahead and call in 202-588-0893. We're going to take a short break. I'm going to be back in just a moment. And if we've got a caller, that would be something fun to do. So stand by and stay tuned. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Netfa Freeman of Voices with Vision. Latest word on the status of our beloved brother Mumia Abu-Jamal since his successful heart surgery is that he's been transferred out of the hospital and is now in the prison infirmary. But Mumia is not out of danger. Take action. Call for his freedom. Find all phone numbers, email addresses, and social media contact information for the people who need to be pushed on jamaljournal.blogspot.com. That's jamaljournal.blogspot.com. Also go there for the most up-to-date information about Mumia.
Peace. I'm DJ Underdog, inviting you to join me on Black Star Radio Mondays, 10 p.m. to midnight, beginning April 19th. We share the hottest sounds out of Africa from all corners of the motherland and bring you the sound of the African underground to D.C. and all points in between. Together, we'll explore African genres from Amapiano, Genge, Coupe de Calle, Zouk, Lingala, Ethiopian hits, Soukous, Nigerian hits, Egyptian hits, and Afrobeats. The destination is Africa. And the mission is oneness. Journey with us Mondays at 10 p.m. right here on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time. Peace.
Bonjour, bonjour. Welcome. This is the Sex, Politics, and Religion Hour, Spar with Jamila. Today we have been talking about Haiti from not just the point of view of the terrible news of the day, but making sure that we retain a historical context as we think about this country and as we think about how, in particular, U.S. and French and Catholic Church involvement often propped up governments and leaders that the people themselves have called illegitimate and what have you. So we have some folks on the phone. This is wonderful. I really miss taking calls. The pandemic kind of took that away from me, at least. But let's find out who is with us. Welcome to the program, caller. I'm Jamila. Who are you?
Good afternoon, Sister Jamila. This is your fellow programmer, Netflix Freeman.
Hey.
Yes. I want to thank you for covering this issue. I'll be real quick and just, you know, the caller said so much. I mean, not the caller, the guests that you've had, but just some quick things is that, one is that there's a lot of interest, corporate interest. I tuned in late to the first call, Jacob Johnson, but the corporate interest in the country that have been, you know, that guide U.S. policy toward Haiti are like Hanes, Fruit of the Loom, the Gap, the textile mills, the corporations, the textile ones in Haiti. That's where they really thrive, and they've actually, had influence on the domestic policies of Haiti to where people in those industries, workers in those industries, are getting hyper exploited. There's the I don't know if anyone brought up the Aristide, but Rebecca, who was on earlier, brought up the 1915. Occupation and the usurpation of things, which is really right now what's happening now, looks like the same type. It leaves open for that same type of usurping of the Haitian sovereignty. And mentioning the core group that really governs Haiti, people focus on, you know, Martelly before this one, Moïse. Jovenel Moïse before him, it was Martelly. People focus on the presidents, but it's really white people and white rich white ruling class that are ruling Haiti and through the governments of the United States, through the OAS, the Organization of American States, through the United Nations, through France, through Brazil, these countries that are part of what's known as the core group that actually lay out all of the policy and what's happening in Haiti. So they're actually directly responsible for the conditions that are here. The irony is, one irony is that the United States and the media is squealing. We're saying squealing over what happened with with Trump trying to usurp the Constitution and maintain power. But this is the same exact same thing they've supported in Haiti with Jovenel Moïse, you know, extending his constitutional mandate.
Are you saying that calling an election, that saying we're going to put off the election, actually it's illegitimate? Saying anything such that I can remain in power here in the U.S., it's a problem, but in Haiti, we support that?
Yeah, that's
is
what
that
I'm
what
saying.
You're saying?
The only that, difference,
that,
the only
but see, that's not what you say. That's what's happening. Thank you for bringing that up.
The only caveat I would leave, and I'll end now, is that I don't see it as we, you know, it's they do it. Because when you started, you were talking to Rebecca, and you said, I don't know why I'm so upset about what's happening in Haiti. I'm not even Haitian. But the fact is, we're black. We got to be upset about what's happening in Haiti because they're treating Haiti because it's a black nation. And anyway, but that's it. Thank you for having me on. I'll let you go to the
next
caller.
Thank you so much for calling in, Nefa. When is your program? Make sure my listeners know to listen to you, too.
Thank you. We will be doing covering it on our end, too. Tuesday mornings from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tuesdays at 9 to 10 a.m. We're also going to pick it up, have some guests on about Haiti, too.
Fantastic. We're going to pull some resources because this is so important for us to do. Thank you, Netfa. I think we have another caller, too, in just a few more minutes. So let me welcome on the next caller to the program.
Hello, Ms. Jamila. This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany.
Guten Tag, Rick. Good to chat.
First of all, let me say Angela Merkel is on her way out. And I hope you're watching that situation carefully. But to your topic, I spent time in Washington, in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, and in New York with the Church of Bible Understanding. They were a small cult run by a man named Stuart Trail. He orchestrated an orphanage in Haiti in the late 70s and early 80s. And while in that situation, I learned a little bit about American and French politics. What did COVID do to the population in the first year? And are the people relatively paranoid about disease now as a weapon against them?
Now, you know we got 2 minutes before I have to end the show and do the news. And that is a fantastic question. My guest, Rebecca Bonhomme, talked about the fact that the UN came into Haiti and wound up spreading cholera, while under the auspices of the Clinton Foundation down there. These things, these natural disasters, these disease-spreading events that happen, it's very hard to discuss them in the time that we have and do it justice. But, I'm not going to punch above my weight with that answer, with that question. It's not a dodge. It's a promise that we're going to get back to it. But yeah, it's something that we absolutely need to consider. It is something that we need to not just think about, but we can look at Haiti. We can look at Guatemala. We can look at other places where U.S. intervention has led to sick people and in some cases sterilized women. And have that longer discussion. However, we are coming to the end of this program, and you always like to do this. Probably if I started the show taking callers, you'd get in earlier, and we could discuss that. But I want to thank my guests this hour. I want to thank my listeners for being with me. Please do not let this fall off of the radar. The issue of the violence in Haiti is not about this is a quick, easy, violence thing. there are political forces that have been at work, and the U.S. has played into these, and the people of Haiti are not a sovereign people. The people of Haiti do not have the self-determination that we here in the United States take for granted and enjoy. Asterisks. We know what's going on in the Congress. We're working on it. So a lot of complexity, but absolutely the most important thing is that we continue to watch, we continue to monitor, and we continue to remind those who we elect. So I want to thank you for being with us. This has been Spar with Jamila. We do it every Thursday. And please, until we talk again, be well.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. A U.S. citizen of Haitian descent has been arrested in connection with the assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse, a senior official in Port-au-Prince said today. A U.S. citizen is among the six people arrested so far in Moïse's killing, according to Haiti's Minister of Elections and Interparty Relations, who told the Washington Post that at least one other detainee is also believed to be a Haitian American. Four other suspects have been killed, authorities said. Moïse had dissolved the parliament in January 2020 and ruled by decree, though opponents and protesters demanded for him to step down. His wife was also shot and seriously injured and was evacuated to Miami for treatment. Global deaths from coronavirus have now topped 4 million, and the World Health Organization is warning against nations relaxing their COVID restrictions. The WHO is pointing to the rapid spread of the highly contagious Delta variant, which has been spotted in more than 100 countries. Yesterday, officials at a briefing warned that more contagious variants are currently winning the race against vaccines. This is especially concerning since most of the world's population has yet to be immunized. The massive search effort at the condo collapse in Florida has gone from a rescue to a recovery after an official says that no additional victims are thought to be still alive. The confirmed death toll stands at 60 after authorities on Wednesday said they found 18 additional victims. The number of people unaccounted for remains at 86. Black students and faculty groups at the University of North Carolina presented a list of demands, saying that the institution needs self-examination on race. Things came to a boiling point when UNC first declined to grant tenure to journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones. Students and faculty have also cited disproportionate scrutiny by campus police, as well as general discriminatory treatment. Julia Clark, vice president of the Black Student Movement, said, quote, "It is hypocritical for this university to claim that Black lives matter while disregarding the pain they have caused their own Black students and faculty." Former South African President Jacob Zuma turned himself in to police early this morning to serve a 15-month sentence for contempt of court. Zuma had refused a court order demanding he testify before a commission investigating corruption during his time as president from 2009 to 2018. After failing to comply, Zuma was ordered to turn himself over to police by midnight Wednesday or face arrest. The corruption investigation into Zuma has heard testimony from former ministers and corporate executives alleging Zuma allowed a wealthy family to influence cabinet appointments and state contracts. Zuma is also facing a separate corruption trial focused on a 1999 weapons deal in which he allegedly took bribes from a French arms manufacturer. Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga has declared a new state of emergency in Tokyo today due to rising infections in the capital and the rapid spread of the highly contagious COVID Delta variant. Organizers said today they would bar spectators from most events at the games and that they are scheduled to reopen in just 2 weeks. The state of emergency declared over Tokyo will start July 12th and run through August 22nd.